Hello, everybody, and welcome to the It's the Pictures podcast. I'm John Gilpatrick.
And I'm Max Colville.
And Max is our first episode together as official podcast partners.
I'm really excited.
Max and I, of course, recorded a couple episodes on my website, johnlikesmovies.com, and we had a really fun time podcasting together, and I hope you had a fun time listening. So we thought we'd jump in on a sort of joint venture across both our sites and see where this takes us. So It's the Pictures is our title. I think this would probably be a good place if we had one to sort of have a tagline or a motto or something like that, but maybe that'll come soon.
Yeah, that's in the works.
But I mean, the gist of it is It's the Pictures. We're gonna be talking about movies. I mean, let's jump right into it. This week, Max, we had a lovely treat from our friends over at Criterion. My wallet isn't as pleased with it as my, you know, my head and my heart are, but you know, that's a conversation for me and my wife, maybe.
I could fully agree with you. As you were saying, we were pleased to have a Criterion flash sale where all the titles were 50% off. And I told my wife, I randomly texted her, "Don't worry, I behaved." And she's like, "What do you mean?" I'm like, "Don't worry about it."
So, you made a purchase, I'm assuming.
Oh yeah, I did.
What did you pick up?
I picked up the new 4K restoration of The Graduate on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
I picked up I Knew Her Well.
Oh, okay.
On Blu-ray. I don't know too much about it, but it seems interesting enough.
Yeah, it does.
And then I really wanted to see this, which was just recently released as well, was Charlie Chaplin's The Kid.
Okay.
I've heard a lot of good things about that particular Charlie Chaplin movie.
So those are your three purchases?
Yeah, see, I was behaving.
Oh, yeah. See, I went a little happier than you did. I also picked up The Graduate, and the timing really could not have been more perfect for me because, you know, I think I told you, you know, on Twitter or texting or something that, like, I didn't pick up Inside Llewyn Davis when it came out for full price because I was saving that for The Graduate because it's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Right.
And so this sale started the day that The Graduate came out. And I had been planning on going during my lunch break at work to Barnes & Noble to pick it up for full listing price, and I didn't have to, so that was a nice surprise. The only downside is that I don't have it in my possession yet, which I thought I would, but, you know, I can live with that for the $20 off.
Yeah, dig into the special features and everything.
Yeah, soon. I mean, it'll be fun. And so I also got The Graduate. I got Inside Llewyn Davis, which I'm excited about because that's my favorite movie of from the Coen brothers. And I picked up the movie Gilda, which is sort of like a old noir with Rita Hayworth that I haven't seen, but I've heard good things about. And I also picked up Death by Hanging from Oshima. Japanese director from the 60s, and I don't know much about it besides the premise, and that it just kind of sounded like something I'd enjoy, so that was like my big blind buy. And Oshima is a director who I don't really know that much about, and I thought, well, maybe this is a good opportunity to sort of dig into him.
Were those the ones you picked up, or?
Yeah, I got four.
I thought you had mentioned Downhill Racer, did you?
Oh, I ended up not getting that.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I thought I should probably stick with four, and so Downhill Racer got cut. But you know, I'll pick it up by the time the summer annual sale rolls around.
Well, that's how I felt about Gilda actually, because I was looking at that too. That was going to be on my short list, and the double feature, The Emigrants and The New Land, was going to be there as well.
I thought about getting that too.
Those will have to wait till June, I suppose.
I know, which is a really frightening prospect because April, there's a ton of stuff coming out that looks really good. And May, which got the lineup got announced, I think, last week, has a lot of stuff in it that I'm interested in. So I hope that June, to be perfectly honest, is a kind of a crappy month for Criterion releases because my list is really long.
No, they've been on a winning streak lately. I mean, every month you see something that comes out, and whether or not you know it or not, it seems to be either interesting or something you'd like to try.
Yeah, and I remember, like, kind of last year at this time. We had learned what the releases would be through, almost half of the year, and me kind of thinking that it was not a great year so far for Criterion. And, that changed, and you and I talked at length about some of the things that came out with at the end of the year in November, particularly with like the Apu trilogy and Don't Look Back and stuff like that. But I think throughout 2016, every month has had at least like two or three movies that really interested me. And I'm really, it's fun to sort of be away from the like end of the year, like onslaught of new releases, because I can kind of dig into some of these packages that have been sitting on my shelf for a little while. I still haven't watched some of the stuff I got at the last Barnes and Noble sale. So hopefully I'll be getting around to those soon, and then I'll have a new package on my doorstep next week to keep me busy for a while.
Yeah, maybe some future episode we'll post our backlog of Criterion features and have
Oh, we are going to be talking for a long time.
our listeners pick out a movie for us to watch.
That would be fun, actually. Yeah, that's a good, great idea.
So, should we move on to today's big topic?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
So this Sunday is going to be the 88th annual Academy Awards. If somehow you're listening to this and you don't know that, then now you do. Basically, recently, it seems that the field has changed a bit about what films are favored in what categories. I mean, some of them have stood the test of time and through all the different awards. I mean, something like Inside Out, an animated feature, you should pretty much mark that one down. But John and I are now going to talk about some of the big categories and what we expect to happen on Oscar night.
I know one of the things that's almost certainly going to happen. I'm going to need a really stiff drink throughout the Oscar ceremony. If expectations stay true to form for the two big categories.
Well, let's save those. Let's start off with
Okay, sure.
some of the smaller categories. And so foreign language film, you would think, let's go through the five. We have Son of Saul, we have Mustang, Embrace of the Serpent, Thebe, and A War. And John, I don't know about you, but I think that Son of Saul pretty much has this one.
I think you're probably right. I mean, it's sort of been the favorite for this category ever since it debuted at Cannes last year. I haven't actually seen it, so it's a tricky, and I've actually only seen one of the movies in the category, so it's a tough one for me to project.
Which one did you say?
Mustang.
Okay.
So it's kind of a hard one for me to project based on anything besides what I'm hearing. But yeah, Son of Saul, has the biggest profile. It's won a handful of awards already, and the old Kate Winslet joke from the show Extras is like, make a Holocaust movie and you get an Oscar, and this one is one, and against all odds, it's supposed to be very novel, and so I think it's probably the favorite. If there is an upset, I think and hope it'll be Mustang, because I really like that movie quite a bit. But what do you think? Is it Son of Saul to lose as well?
I think it's Son of Saul to lose. I've seen Mustang and Embrace of the Serpent recently,
Okay.
and both of those movies are fantastic. I mean, I've heard good things about Thebe and A War as well. So I think that the category itself is very strong. I
Yeah.
mean, I don't think many people will see anything outside of maybe Son of Saul or Mustang, just given the buzz around those two films and.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's Son of Saul's as well. I think that a lot of people were behind it too after it lost at Cannes because D-Pan won and where's that film? No
That was
one.
a weird sort of year for awards at Cannes, wasn't it, last year?
Yeah, I think Carol picked up a whole bunch of awards and it sort of not the Academy didn't see it that way,
No, they didn't.
but. But no, it's Son of Saul's, but I think it's a very strong category regardless.
Yeah, I'm excited to dig into everything else.
All right. Was there? We briefly talked about animated. That seems to be. Would you agree that that's a lock?
Lock it up. Inside Out. Congratulations.
Yeah. Not to say that the other films. I mean, it's a very good year for animated films. I'm glad that they decided to pick more than just two Pixar's Minions and Shaun the Sheep, you know?
Yeah, for sure. But it's you're right. I mean, I loved Shaun the Sheep. I'm happy it got nominated. And, you know, it's always nice to see some of the smaller animated films get recognized here. And even though I haven't seen either Boy in the World or... help me out.
When Marnie was there?
Yes, when Marnie was there. I know you're a fan of at least that one, right?
Yeah, I haven't seen Boy in the World.
Right. So it's nice to see them recognized and hopefully more people will seek them out.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking on Twitter today and someone had said you can't knock them when it's like there's a Pixar, there's an Aardman, you know, you got like an adult animated film of Animalisa.
Right, yeah, sure.
You got a Studio Ghibli film of when Marnie was there, and, you know, and then you got, like, a silent Brazilian animated film, so.
So that's cool. That's they did their diverse. Homework.
Yeah. All right, so let's go to, I'd say documentary, but I don't, how many of these have you seen? We'll go down the list anyways. There's Amy, Cartel Land, The Look of Silence, What Happened, Miss Simone, and Winter on Fire, Ukraine's Fight for Freedom.
I've seen everything on that list except for Cartel Land so far.
Oh, so, all right. Because I've only seen Amy, so maybe you can talk more about
it. Yeah, definitely. I mean, as far as the win, I think at this point, it could go in a number of ways. I think Amy's probably the favorite because it was, you know, a fairly sizable documentary hit. And, you know, it's the type of story that... the Academy responds to in this category, even though its technique isn't something that the Academy necessarily responds to, and so that's kind of where my trepidation comes in saying it's a lock. I think if anything beats it, it could be Cartel Land, which is, like I said, the movie I haven't seen, but I know that there was a lot that went into making that happen, and just some of the clips I've seen and stuff I've heard about it makes it sound like kind of a remarkable achievement, that one of those, like, how does this exist type movies. Certainly The Look of Silence has a chance because it, it's sort of a sequel to The Act of Killing, which was nominated and I think some people would say could have won a couple of years ago. And it's a more straightforward movie than The Act of Killing was, so... maybe a little bit easier for the Academy to embrace, even though it's a very difficult sit. And then the other two are Netflix movies, which is kind of interesting. And, I mean, What Happened, Miss Simone? Both are really good. I quite liked both. Winter on Fire is kind of a more traditionally told documentary. And it's really amazing how succinctly they sum up that sort of conflict that happened in Ukraine in the past like couple years, and really exceptional. And Miss Simone is is probably not gonna win, I would say, because it recalls Amy in the way it's about a female musician who is a really tragic story, and a lot of it's told with found footage, and it's not as devoted to that technique as Amy is, but it's definitely relies on it a lot, and it's very good. But I'd say those two are probably bringing up the rear as far as potential winners go. So I would say smart money is with Amy, Cartel Land, and Look of Silence if you want to take a long shot.
Oh, well, it's interesting you say that, because of course The Look of Silence has its loud fans, sure, whether they be film critics or other people who are really into film. It seems easily that Amy would be one that people would be able to say, oh, well, this isn't that hard to sit through. This is going to be, while not exactly light and bubbly, it's going to be enjoyable listening to Amy Winehouse, I guess. But
yeah, I mean, it's definitely like, you know, if you gave an average Academy voter these five discs to, and like, what are they going to gravitate towards? They're probably going to gravitate towards Amy before any of these other movies, you know, because it just seems on the surface like it's going to be the most easily digestible. But what is great about the movie is that the director, you know, goes down this sort of different route to telling the story, and then he also really doesn't shy away from like how vast the group of people, you know, the factors in her death were, and that there are so many people that failed her and so many just sort of institutions that failed her. And so, you know, by the end of it, I was sort of like a blubbery mess, but other people might not like have the strong emotional reaction I did. I think that everyone who watches it, or most people who watch it, are going to really admire it. So if people aren't watching everything, which I think everyone who follows the Oscars can attest to the fact that they don't, watch Amy. And, I mean, at the very least, they're going to hear about Amy from their friends. So, it could be, that's kind of, I think, why it's going to win.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's great that it's a fantastic, documentary in and of itself, but I also have this background with the director,
right?
And he directed Senna, the documentary, a few years back,
which is probably a better movie.
In my opinion, it is a better movie, but it wasn't even nominated.
I know,
and so maybe I feel somewhat like this is for him. I mean, obviously, no one else will feel that way come Oscar night, but
yeah, but you know, I think documentarians do. I think that, like, they realized that that was, like, a big oversight, and that, you know, even if he's not necessarily, like, quote-unquote in the club, that he's a guy who other documentarians can watch his movies and say, like, wow, like, this guy's got, like, a really distinct voice, like, he knows how to tell a story, a real story, you know, using the most, making the most out of the medium, and that it's his time, you know?
Yeah, I can see that.
We'll see.
And, all right. We'll certainly have our own opinions on all the other categories. John, are you doing a selection on your own site about what your picks are going to be?
Yeah, I'm going to do something. You know, it'll probably be posted around the time that we post a podcast, so you can read it at johnlinksmovies.com, but I'll do will win, should win sort of thing of like what I think, what I'm predicting versus what my favorites are in each respective category.
All right, cool. Like I'll probably do something similar on my own site, passioncinema.com. I just figured that way we can not do some of the categories like costume design or cinematography.
Yeah, I'm fine breezing through that.
Yeah, we can go ahead and get into the actor, the actress.
The juicy stuff.
Yeah. All right, so maybe the hardest one to call the night, actress in supporting role.
Yeah, I know.
We have Jennifer Jason Leigh in The Hateful Eight. We have Rooney Mara in Carol. Rachel McAdams for Spotlight. Alicia Vikander for The Danish Girl. And Kate Winslet for Steve Jobs. So where do you think they'll go with this one, John?
I mean, if I had to guess at this point, probably Alicia Vikander, because she had such a strong year, and because there's like the lack of another really, really viable contender from, say, a Best Picture frontrunner or something like that. I think that they're going to look at her and say, like, oh, like she was so great in so many movies, and she was really good in this one, and let's give her the award. You know, she's the it girl of 2015, which, you know, I think we've talked about before. So, it seems like she's poised for a Jennifer Lawrence type night. Like, you know, when she won for a Silver Linings Playbook, there was arguably other contenders in the category that could have taken it home, but she was like just such a force that year. And I think we're looking at something similar here with Alicia Vikander.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because while I agree that she is the front runner, I have to wonder that if The Hateful Eight or Carol had been nominated for Best Picture, would of the campaign for these two actresses have been higher? I think the campaign for Alicia has been very loud and very, like, everybody knows that she's nominated for this. And I don't know. I didn't think that many people actually watched The Danish Girl. Maybe because Eddie Redmayne won last year, they said, well, he'll be in another good performance. Let's put this one on. But
I totally agree about, you know, if Carol had gotten a Best Picture nomination, I would probably be picking Rooney Mara here, because it would have signaled to me that Carol is stronger than it, I think, is in reality. And that people just didn't fall in love with that movie the way that most critics did. So are they going to embrace the performance over some of these other ones? I don't know. I'd be surprised. I would not be disappointed, but I'd be surprised.
Right. I mean, the only one in that category that's film that has a nominated for Best Picture is Spotlight. But I never thought Rachel McAdams was really the best part of that movie at all. But
no, probably not. I mean, she's very good. I'm happy she got nominated, but I don't think that she's going to win, even though, right, her film is arguably the strongest of any of these films with the Academy, generally speaking. But, I mean, I don't know. Do you think Kate Winslet could win? It seems crazy, but she won the Golden Globe.
No. I mean, I have trouble with that performance anyways. I don't know.
Yeah.
We might have talked about it before.
Yeah.
But for those who haven't listened to the other three shows, Kate Winslet is supposed to be Polish, and she somehow finds her accent in the second or third act of the film, where it doesn't seem like it's even there in the first act.
It's odd. And, you know, it's not my favorite Kate Winslet performance of all time, but I don't know. I don't want to say nothing would surprise me here, because in some ways, like, they'd all surprise me, but
maybe the Academy is looking forward to seeing Kate and Leo holding Oscars together, and they'll make it happen for some reason.
They were worried about ratings, and they did not worry. Oh my gosh, that'd be amazing, actually. So yeah, I mean, I'd say Vikander. You feel similarly?
Yeah, I think Vikander is pretty much a lock. I mean, I guess a lock as far as, like, what's her competition?
Right. Well, I mean, that's kind of why I'm picking her, but it doesn't feel like I'm picking her by default rather than because of any sort of, you know, precursor evidence or anything else. It's just sort of like, I can't imagine anything else happening. But in another year, she'd be like an also-ran almost in this category.
Right. I mean, but she had like 7 movies that she starred in that year. Maybe it's just a cumulative award for everything that she did this year.
I'm going to pretend it's for Ex Machina. I think a lot of people feel similarly. I would say she was the best thing about The Danish Girl.
No, she is, by far. If you're going to watch that movie, watch it for her. But
and she's also definitely a leading actress.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well.
All right.
Last thing I'd say just about that is, you know, we're going to talk about some of the other acting categories, I'm sure, right now, but this is the one that I feel the least confident about. Do you feel similarly?
What, as in, like,
as in versus the other acting categories? Yeah.
No, I think we'll get to supporting actor, which I still think is Harry.
Okay, do you want to talk about that now?
Yeah, let's go into that now.
Okay.
So for actor in a supporting role, there's Kristen Bell for The Big Short, Tom Hardy for The Revenant, Mark Ruffalo for Spotlight, Mark Rylance for Bridge of Spies, and Sylvester Stallone for Creed. Now, in general, I thought it was a very strong year for actor in a supporting role. I thought you could have had 5 more guys on this list, easy.
5 more guys just from Spotlight.
Right. I mean, me on my own personal ballot, I had Paul Dano from Love and Mercy.
I finally caught up with that.
Oh, you did?
I did. I liked it very much.
Good. And good him. To hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he was phenomenal in that. And but that's neither here or there. I'm hearing anybody could win this category. I mean, unfortunately, maybe Mark Ruffalo has the lowest word right now. I'm hearing people are loving Christian Bale and his small performance in Big Short. He really lands that character. People are liking Tom Hardy and saying he's the most developed character in that movie.
That's probably true.
Mark Rylance was the front runner for a long time for Bridge of Spies.
And yeah.
Is the best performance in that movie against Tom Hanks. And Sylvester Stallone is the favorite because he's never won and he's been doing the same role for years and people feel like this will be it. So
I think it will be too. I think that I feel stronger about this than I do a supporting actress for sure. And it just like it feels like to me that everyone wants this to happen. So
what was that they want to happen?
Stallone.
Okay.
There's so much sentiment, good sentiment in his direction for this performance and from this movie that no one was expecting a ton from, but kind of knocked everyone's socks off. And I realized that maybe that wasn't the case with the Academy at large because it didn't get nominated anywhere else. But I still feel like there was something about, you know, it's just sort of like magic in a bottle, this performance at this time. And that Stallone is, you know, who would have thought like a year or two ago that he'd ever be seriously contending for an Oscar at this stage in his career. But here we are. And it's like, how do you not like bring that one home, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he's been committed to the role since when was Rocky 1? 74?
1976, I think. Okay. 77, right. Maybe, yeah.
So, I mean, for
40 years.
Right. It's kind of ridiculous. And, I mean, you don't see Sylvester Stallone when you see those movies. You see Rocky. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's the only thing that he's ever done. I mean, I'm not too familiar with the Rambo films. But I see Sylvester Stallone and I think Rocky. I don't think Expendables or whatever else he's ever tried to do. So he's my sentimental favorite as well. I mean, I don't think it'd be fun. It'd be hilarious of me and you to assume that him not mentioning his director and co-star at the Golden Globes would hurt this, considering how the Academy decided to vote this year.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I don't think that had hurt him at all.
No, I don't think so either.
But I don't know. I for a long time I thought it was Mark Rylance, and I think it is a signature performance. I think that while he is an older actor, he really hasn't had a big boom yet. I mean, this is his time. He has Wolf Hall, and he has Bridge of Spies, and he's got to be the voice and Big Friendly Giant. So
that's right. Yeah.
This is his breakthrough.
And the year of the Rylance.
Right. But I don't know. It's good for him. I mean, at his age to be this prevalent now, but
yeah, I mean, he did a great job. I think everyone realizes that. I think his award is the nomination, to be, you know, kind of blunt. And I think ultimately, like, if anybody else wins, this is going to be one of those times where we look back, you know, 10 years from now and just, like, wonder, like, how in the world did they not give it to Stallone? How didn't they give it to Rocky? Like, that was just, you know, it's just sort of one of these, like, cultural inflection points I think we're always going to remember is, like, when this franchise came back from the dead in such, like, a way that was of this moment, you know, that was so, it was such like a 2015 movie, Creed, and that this performance was so good and affected so many people. And, that, you know, if they're going to give it to Tom Hardy for the freaking Revenant or even Christian Bale, who I thought was funny in The Big Short and a movie that I loved, it just feels like a mistake.
Yeah, I don't know, but do you think Stallone's performance is so good that if we didn't have six other films of Stallone as Rocky, we would still feel the same way about it?
Not necessarily. I think that's what I mean. I think that contributes so much to why this works is because we have a 40-year relationship with the character. And I mean, maybe not you and I, because we're not 40, but
Right.
we've, you know, I've seen all the movies. I
Yeah, I've
think
seen them too.
you've seen, yeah. I think Academy voters have seen them all over for those 40 years, by and large, you know? And
On
so they,
TBS or TNT.
well, and you know, and they've probably introduced them to their kids, and that, you know, their relationship with the Rocky Balboa character is a lot stronger than necessarily you or I. And so is that sentimentality even stronger for them than it is with me? Which, if I mean, if you can't tell, I feel really strongly about this category of where it should go. So I feel like they're gonna kind of have the same feeling, like, you know, oh, this guy was nice, that was a good performance, I like that, but geez, like, Rocky was so good in that movie, Stallone was so good, like, you gotta give it to him. The only way I could see it happening is if people just didn't watch it, which is, I guess, possible. But at this point, this far into it, I feel like they probably did. They at least gave it a gander, or they heard from people that, like, oh, it's really good, you should watch it. So, I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah, I'll use this anecdote that you say about people watching it. I have a buddy who's watched six of the movies, like all the way up to Rocky Balboa, but he was so not sure about this movie that he refused to see it in theaters. And I'm like, this is the best one since the original. And he's like,
Yeah.
I just don't know. And he's, I guess he, I don't even know if he's even seen it yet. And I just, it's just people weren't sure. It's like letting another director do it. The son and all those things that led to it, but it delivered. The movie's fantastic and maybe should have been nominated for Best Picture, but
That would have been nice. Even, I mean, it's not even close to my top 10 or anything like that. I just, it would have been nice to recognize kind of, I you know, I'm like a big proponent of finding the movies that are going to kind of stand the test of time, and you know, something like The Big Short, which I loved, is one of my favorite movies of the year. Is like, I don't feel that way about that movie. I think that's a movie that's like very much of 2015, but are we going to necessarily remember it 30 years from now? Probably not, but I think we're going to remember Creed. I think that's like one of the movies from this year that is really going to stand the test of time. So that's why I really wanted to get recognized in this way.
all right, well, we'll talk about more about what movies we think are going to stand the test of time when we get to the Best Picture category.
Yeah, sure we will.
All right, let's head on to actress in a leading role. In that category, we have Cate Blanchett for Carol. We have Brie Larson for Room. Jennifer Lawrence for Joy. Charlotte Rampling for 45 Years. And Saoirse Ronan for Brooklyn.
Good pronunciation on Saoirse.
Yeah, I've been practicing.
You
It's
did
like
well.
yeah, it's like social like inertia.
Exactly. You have to remind yourself
Oh,
that. So, you know, I mean, I think we probably both think it's going to be Brie Larson.
yeah, I mean, I agree fully. It's Brie Larson. She was my number two pick for the year, so I'm not that bent out of shape. I think it's a great performance in a very difficult movie. I had my own personal number one, which was Saoirse Ronan, which I thought she was great in Brooklyn, and I thought the whole ensemble cast in that movie is what really makes it.
Yeah, they're all really good.
So, but I'm not too disappointed. Do you have feelings about any of the other roles?
I mean, I thought Cate Blanchett was really good. I think all three. I haven't actually seen 45 Years or Joy, so I don't have anything to say about those two performances. The three that I did see, I feel really strongly about all of them, and I wouldn't be upset if any of them won. I think that my favorite of the bunch is also Saoirse Ronan, which is sort of just like this movie star in the making performance that, like, you watch it and you just think, like, boy, like, she's gonna take on the world, and just owns the movie, you know,
Oh yeah,
in a way that,
every frame of the film.
yeah, in a way that, like, I think Brie Larson doesn't do in Room. But she doesn't do that because she doesn't need to. Like, there's a lot of other stuff going on, specifically the performance from Jacob Tremblay, the young boy in the movie, that he helps carry some of the weight that I think Saoirse Ronan, it's all on her shoulders in Brooklyn, which is probably why I feel a little bit more strongly about that performance. But, you know, if there's a spoiler, I guess it could be Ronan, because Brooklyn, you know, is Best Picture nominee, and I think she was out there really kind of working it. And but it feels like Brie Larson is probably inevitably going to take home the trophy, and, you know, good for her. She did a great job, and she's had, like, a great, albeit, you know, relatively short career, and I'm sure she's got a lot of great things on the horizon as well.
Right, and I mean, let's go back to regular Academy standards, right, and both actresses get ugly for the role. Saoirse has her sickness on a boat, which
right, yeah.
If you see the movie, you'll know what we mean, and Brie is... Her character is put through some nasty stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people go watch the movie and be like, what this woman had to go through and everything like that. It's just, they'll be like, they'll attach that feeling to her role. And that's ultimately what they think. They think, look at this character and everything she had to go through. So,
yeah, I mean, the stakes in that movie are so much higher than they are in any other, in Brooklyn or Carol or you know, I'm assuming in the other two movies as well, but
yeah, they are. I haven't seen Joy either. I mean, funnily enough, like, I'm sure you thought the same thing. Joy would have had to been a movie we had to watch given what was involved in it, and it was going to be a Best Picture nominee and all that, but it just flopped. So yep. I didn't see it either. I'm sure Jennifer's fantastic in it, like she normally is.
But, I'll catch up with it eventually, but I just, right. Yeah, I didn't feel pulled to it. Too many other things going on at the end of the year.
But Charlotte Rampling is fantastic in 45 Years. It's a really, she's on the screen the whole movie too. And yeah. It's a very good role. But I think that the three that you have seen were always going to be the three that were going to be nominated.
Yeah.
And what it was going to be.
Weirder things have probably happened, but I'm not sure that they're going to in this category on Sunday.
Yeah.
And I think that goes for Best Actor too, would you say?
Yeah, do you know the list? Would you like to do this category?
I don't actually have it in front of me, but...
All right. Well, since I have it in front of me, I'll do it for us.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
All right. So for actor in a leading role, there's Bryan Cranston for Trumbo, Matt Damon for The Martian, Leonardo DiCaprio for The Revenant, Michael Fassbender for Steve Jobs, and Eddie Redmayne for The Danish Girl.
And it's finally Leo's time, right?
I would agree with that.
Are we happy that it's finally Leo's time, or are we disappointed that it's Leo's time now?
Disappointed that it's Leo's time now.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel similarly. My disdain for The Revenant knows no bounds, but I do think that he, you know, does a good job at a very specific and very loud type of acting that I don't normally respond much to. I'm happy that we can finally dispel of this like Leonardo DiCaprio is long overdue sort of narrative that took hold over the last few years, and that he can kind of go and act without this cloud hanging over him of that, like, whatever role he takes on is because he feels like he needs an Oscar. I think that, like, played out.
You mentioned that, like, but I think that might hurt him because I like that he's picking out these roles that make it seem like he has to get an Oscar because he's in these more prominent movies, these more important movies. I don't want to see Leonardo DiCaprio in the next Avengers.
No, I don't think he's ever going to do that. I think that, you know, and I don't think necessarily his like choice of roles is going to change. It's more just that we can judge it based on its own merits and not like whether or not it's finally going to deliver him an Oscar. I don't think that like he's ever he's not an actor who needs to do that, and I don't think he's an actor who will do that, you know, be the next Marvel superhero or anything like that. It's just how we can view them and not have to, like, talk about that, and him maybe not have to feel like he needs to, deliver in such a way that like no Oscar voter can ever deny it anymore. You know what I mean? Like you can feel it in The Revenant more so than I think any other movie he's done during this little stretch that like, all right, I need to suffer, you know, I need to suffer with a capital S, and then they're gonna finally take me seriously and they're gonna give me that award that I've like coveted for so long. And like next time he goes out and he does a movie like this, he could just dial it down a little bit.
Well, it's interesting on another token that we're talking about this, because it seems, I don't know what drew him to The Revenant, but Alejandro Gonzalez Iñárritu is a director that gets Best Actor nominations. He knows how to direct his talent to get these nominations. You look at his movies, even what was it, Beautiful, and he had.
Yeah, Spanish language movie.
Yeah, and he had a nomination for Best Actor. So, I mean, I'm not saying at all that that's why Leonardo DiCaprio decided to take on this picture. But if he was trying to get his Oscar, maybe he couldn't get it with Scorsese, or maybe if, I don't know.
It's weird because Scorsese, if you look, and I don't know, I know this was true as of, maybe 2013, but he has, Scorsese, more so than any other director in, I think, movie history, has the most Oscar nominations for actors in his movies.
Oh, all right.
But
So, yeah.
still, Leo couldn't, however many times they partnered, he couldn't sort of bring it home. But the interest, I mean, to your point about Iñárritu, like, they filmed this before we knew that the Birdman was going to be a big Oscar hit.
Yeah.
And so he had to his name at that point, Beautiful, which got a Best Actor nomination. Babel got, I think, two Best Supporting Actress nominations. 21 Grams, I don't remember if that got much Oscar love
Yeah,
or not.
and I don't know. Amores Perez would have been the ever
That
one. I
was
don't know.
foreign language, I think.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that, Iñárritu is, I think, forever going to be this guy who, like, is an Oscar magnet in the way that, like Tom Hanks was in the 90s and stuff like that. But when they started doing this movie, I don't think anyone knew that was necessarily going to be the case. So I think it was probably a bigger, it felt like a bigger risk at the time than it does right now with all the gold coming in and all the money coming in. But, I'm happy that it's finally happening for him. And whatever movie, whatever, if it's not for The Departed, I'll always think of him in The Departed first, Titanic probably second, and, The Revenant like 30th or 31st.
Now, since we have time, since we both fully agree Leo's gonna win this category, I mean, the other guys, Matt Damon was funny. Michael Fassbender did what he could. And the other two guys, I wasn't too crazy about their roles this year.
I liked Cranston.
All right. Yeah, Cranston's good, but that movie's so troublesome, so.
It's a bad movie.
So I pulled up the list in front of me of the movies that Leo's been nominated before
Okay.
for an actor role. And it's five movies. So four others he was nominated other than Revenant. There's The Wolf of Wall Street, Blood Diamond, The Aviator, and What's Eating Gilbert Grape. Out of those, which one do you think would have been?
You mean if I could reassign his Oscar, which one would I
Yeah,
like to
yeah.
give it to? Gosh, of those four, I mean, I think, I sort of said before that like The Departed is my Leonardo DiCaprio role, it's like, and it still amazes me that in 2006 he got nominated for Blood Diamond and not The Departed, which was the
Right,
Best Picture winner.
Blood Diamond. Who even remembers that movie?
Oh, it was, and he was like, I think actively not that great in it with the accent and all that. So I wouldn't choose that one. And I haven't actually seen What's Eating Gilbert Grape, so I can't choose that one, even though I know a lot of people like him in that movie. Between Wolf of Wall Street and The Aviator, I think The Aviator is a better movie overall, but I think Leonardo DiCaprio kind of owns The Wolf of Wall Street in a way that, like I was talking about before, like. that's one of those performances that he's always going to be associated with, and that will always kind of remember some of his scenes in that movie. So that's probably of my favorite nominated Leonardo DiCaprio movies. That's the one that he does best in. I like The Departed. I like Titanic. I like Django Unchained, and a couple others probably before any of them, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I really like his turn in Django Unchained. I thought that was a really good role for him. But
should have got nominated for that.
Oh yeah, he should have. But from what I think he's better in Wolf of Wall Street out of all those. I haven't seen What's Eating Gilbert Grape, but when he was in The Aviator, he lost to Jamie Foxx for Ray.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think he was better than Jamie Foxx, but
yeah, I think so too.
I mean, Jamie Foxx was fantastic. I mean, it's great that a black actor was actually in a role and won. But
time has been kinder, I think, to The Aviator as a movie than Ray.
Right.
But yeah, what won in 2000? What won when he was nominated for The Wolf of Wall Street? That would have been. It wasn't Chiwetel.
It was Matthew McConaughey for Dallas Buyers.
Oh, see, I mean, that was a terrible choice in my opinion.
Yeah, it was because he lost like 80 pounds.
Yeah. But he didn't do any Quaaludes, so.
Right. So, no, yeah, I mean, yeah, 12 Years a Slave, Chiwetel Ejiofor could have easily won that, so it's not.
He was amazing that year, yeah.
So that I think Aviator would have been his best shot.
Yeah, probably that's probably true. That and that whole year was kind of weird because it seemed like The Aviator was going to be the movie, and then Million Dollar Baby snuck in at the last minute and stole its thunder, and then you know you had Leo who seemed like a sure thing, and then lost out to Ray, which you know I mean I think, and I don't really remember, but I think that everyone kind of was expecting a Jamie Foxx win that night, but just kind of on paper before the movies came out, it seemed like Leo. You know, for The Aviator was a home run, which
yeah,
you know,
it was a lock. It was a lock similar to The Revenant. Revenant has been talked about it at the end of the Oscars last year. It's like The Revenant's going to win next year type deal. And, the front runner.
That's a nice transition to you know, Best Director, Best Picture, if you want.
Yeah, right. So let's go into directing. And for directing, we have Adam McKay with The Big Short, George Miller for Mad Max Fury Road, Alejandro Gonzalez Iñárritu for The Revenant, Lenny Abramson for The Room, and Tom McCarthy for Spotlight.
Right.
And so like we were saying, if you don't know the stat, I think it's like something like the first time in 60 years Alejandro Gonzalez Iñárritu will be a back-to-back Best Director winner. That's the way it's looking.
That's the way it's looking.
I mean, the only one that could upset him, in my view, is George Miller, because George Miller directs the hell out of Mad Max Fury Road.
Yes, he does.
But everybody else, just they are in service of the script or the actors. As much Spotlight is my pick for Best Picture, and I love that film, but I don't think that Tom McCarthy is the reason why it is what it is.
No, I don't think so either. He does a great job for sort of what that movie needs of him.
Yeah, I'd say the same for Adam McKay. I know you're strong in Big Short. What do you?
Oh, I thought he was great. I mean, you know, I don't feel as strongly about his direction as I do necessarily, you know, the script. But he does a really good job, and I thought once upon a time that maybe he could sneak in and win if The Big Short, you know, momentum kept going and kept going and kept going. But I think the DGA sort of halted that and switched it to The Revenant. And ever since then, it's kind of been a steady stream of The Revenant. And as a result, Iñárritu seems like a sure thing, which, you know, I think Richard Linklater is probably at his house, you know, sitting there thinking like, oh, well, you guys could have just waited a year to give it to him.
Yeah, really. I mean, I know when you mention Richard Linklater, you're of course mentioning Boyhood for the listeners who didn't know.
You're right, from last year.
Yeah, from last year. And a lot of people love Boyhood, think that maybe it was upset or should have won. But yeah, you're right. Maybe they could have waited. Richard Linklater's had a wonderful career as well. A lot of fantastic movies. But who's to say that they didn't know?
It's a dangerous thing to think like that. You know, I was like, yeah. Oh, well, I'm not going to give it to what I think is the best because I might have a chance to next year, because you didn't know that The Revenant was going to be, you know, sort of the big Oscar movie of 2015, the way Birdman was last year. So, but it is, you know, I think it is. And I think that's a real shame.
Well, let's go to the big one of them all. And this year, for Best Picture, the Academy decided to go with 8 pictures.
Right.
And they chose The Big Short, Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, Mad Max Fury Road, The Martian, The Revenant, Room, and Spotlight. And so I know John's actually been away for a little bit of time here.
Yeah.
And so he's missed that recently The Revenant has taken hold of the front runner status as Best Picture.
I almost didn't come home. But yeah, it's, I mean, catching up with things and kind of seeing where the odds were before I left versus where they are now. And I'm like, what in the world happened? How could I leave? I left for just a little while. And the Oscar world, as far as I'm concerned, kind of went to hell in a handbasket.
Well, that's what was it 2 weeks ago when you thought it was going to be?
I thought it seemed like The Big Short because it won the PGA Award. And, it just seemed like it had a lot of momentum in its corner. And that, if anything, I was expecting sort of a best picture, best director split, where Inarritu won best director and that was like the Revenant prize. And then either The Big Short or maybe Spotlight at the time could have been the best picture winner because Spotlight, had a lot of guild support with nominations. And then it also won the SAG Award. And I just thought like, okay, well, it's still in the mix, but now it just seems like, all anyone's talking about is The Revenant. And I don't think it's a lock. I still think that, unlike some of the other categories we talked about tonight, like this one's a little bit up in the air and that I think all three of those movies have a chance. But certainly the smart money is on The Revenant.
Yeah, I'd say it's probably like 50-25-25, if you were going to guess a percentage.
Sure.
The Revenant has a 50% chance of winning, and Big Short and Spotlight each have 25%.
The Revenant is Donald Trump, and The Big Short is Marco Rubio, and Spotlight is Ted Cruz.
So they're all Republicans.
That can't be, because I like two of them.
So, no, I mean, so we were talking earlier about momentum and films at the beginning of the year, prestige films on paper, what you would think would be the best picture at the end of the year. And as soon as it ended last year with Birdman winning in all its glory, pundits started predicting The Revenant was going to win Best Picture of 2015.
Right.
And it seems like it might happen. On this podcast, you're vocal about your dislike of The Revenant. But, I've seen much more hatred online, Twitter, Facebook, about people disliking the film. I put it in the bottom tier of the actual 8 nominees.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit.
All right.
I know Spotlight is, your favorite movie of the year. It's in my top 10. The Big Short is also in my top 10. Those are kind of my two favorites of the bunch before you sort of move into a tier, which I'd say includes Brooklyn and Bridge of Spies. I think that, The Martian and and I forgot Mad Max Fury Road, excuse me. That's definitely in my top 10 also. I think that The Martian is kind of a step below that with Room, and then you kind of get to The Revenant, which is, in the basement.
Yeah, I mean, like I have a pretty similar list. I mean, for me, Mad Max and Spotlight are probably, and Mad Max, Spotlight, and Brooklyn are
Okay,
all
yeah.
in my top 10. And then Big Short is pretty much just outside of it. I really enjoy Bridge of Spies and Martian almost equally. They're both really enjoyable movies. And then The Revenant probably just slightly above Room, but they're both near the bottom, I think.
Right, sure.
I think that I know friends and stuff who said Room almost plays like a TV movie with some of its production design and how it's set up and stuff like that. I mean, I disagree, but it's not in the same league as a lot of the movies.
Yeah, I agree.
Certainly the TIFF Audience Choice Award helped.
Oh yeah, I mean that gave it a really big boost, and it tailed off so much after that, you and I think both questioned whether we get a nomination. I don't think I ultimately predicted it. I think I had Carol in that eighth spot, but it ended up being Room, and I think, as I've said several times, the prize is the nomination. It's not contending. I don't think Bridge of Spies is contending. I don't think Brooklyn is contending. Martian ended up not being as strong as we thought it could be. Mad Max Fury Road is the improbable Best Picture nominee of the bunch, and we're left with the three quote unquote front runners. And from there, you have to think about the way that people are going to vote, and the kind of they do this, preferential ballot system, and it helps to be well liked across the board, I think, versus having a lot of people love it and a lot of people hate it. But The Revenant is seems like it's something that everyone who votes in these things can admire from some level, whether it's Leonardo DiCaprio and the actors responding to him, or the directors responding to sort of the challenge to put it all together, and the cinematographers responding to Emmanuel Lubezki and some of the images he captures, and production designers, and how difficult it was, I'm sure, for them to work outside, which we've heard that story ad nauseum over the last few months.
You can see my eyes rolling out of my head.
But it kind of like when you think about it in that context, you can see the win. You can see why this is happening, and why this is like a good Academy movie, because it checks so many of those boxes.
Yeah, it would just be interesting to see what bodies are represented. 'Cause I know the actors represent a big part, and they went for Spotlight. Producers went for Big Short. So, I mean, it depends like how much goes around. I mean, if you're asking me which one of these movies do common people, meaning people who aren't into film like me and you,
Yeah.
they're gonna go for the big movies. They're gonna go with The Revenant. They're gonna go with The Martian, and maybe Big Short. Not maybe Big Short. Probably not. Maybe. More than likely, Bridge of Spies, because it has Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks.
Right, sure. I
So, I
mean,
mean, that.
Spotlight was not a big financial hit. It did well, I think, but it didn't become like a huge cultural talking point, I think, the way that The Revenant did.
Right, and like Michael Keaton, as good as he is, or Mark Ruffalo, is not Leonardo DiCaprio or Matt Damon or Tom Hanks.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it's just rudimentary. It's like when you talk to people and who they know. And I was walking through movie theaters around the time The Revenant came out, and they saw the big poster with Leonardo DiCaprio on it, and I could tell you they didn't care what the movie was. They were like, "Leo's in it."
Yeah.
So I don't know how many Oscar voters feel that way, but.
Well, I'm sure that they all gave it a chance, which you can't necessarily say the same thing about all these other movies. Now, you talked about it being sort of like a 50-25-25 split right now as far as odds. Do you think that either The Big Short or Spotlight is like the likelier spoiler over the other? Do you th like would if you had to rank them as like 1, 2, 3 in likelihood of the win? I think we both would say The Revenant is one. What would you say is number two?
Well, I'm gonna go with my emotions here and say Spotlight is two, and you can say Big Short is two.
Okay, that sounds good. We'll never know. I have a feeling we'll never know who's right, but I would say The Big Short, and part of that is emotional, and part of that is I guess thinking more with my head. But yeah, it's one of those questions we'll never have an answer to.
And at the end of the day, if Mad Max Fury Road somehow wins, I'll be overjoyed.
Oh, then, right? Yeah, all those drinks are going to really, you know, have a happy ending instead of a sad one. yeah, I mean, just generally, you know, transitioning away from the Oscars a little bit, like, are you excited for the ceremony? Are you excited for Chris Rock? Is, like, what are your sort of expectations for the night?
I don't know. Chris Rock has hosted before, and yeah. He seems to do a pretty good job. He's not as unbearable as the Golden Globes performer Ricky Gervais.
Yeah, or I would say Neil Patrick Harris from last year, which was kind of a disaster.
Yeah, I mean, Neil Patrick Harris is great at the Tonys. He's a great performer, singer, dancer, but I don't think he does well with the Oscars and the pomp and circumstance that. I think that not only do we attach to it, but the producers want audiences to attach to it.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird fit.
But no, I think it'll be fine. I think the Academy and the Oscars might need to watch out because Chris Rock will be angry.
It'll be interesting to see kind of how far down that road he goes and what the reception is. Obviously, we're talking about the hashtag Oscar so white controversy that has persisted over the last few weeks, and Chris Rock has said he's on the record saying he's going to talk about it, and we'll see.
I mean, other than that, I mean, the actual show itself is always hit and miss. I mean, it depends how they'll do with remembering, like the in memoriam ceremony. Like sometimes they forget people and. Sometimes it's great.
Yeah.
Or another big controversy this year is that they only have time for three of the best song categories.
That's absurd.
To perform. To me.
Absurd.
And they're only the ones with the big stars.
I know. And, you know, somebody pointed out that the two that got left off are a transgender nominee and a woman. And, that, you know, for all the things that have been said and written about sort of the inclusion problems that they've had, the Academy and Hollywood more generally sort of sends like a bad sign that you're cutting people off when, you know, you can, you know, how many things are they going to have that like we're going to point to and say like you could have fit in half a song here.
I mean, it went back to a few more years. I was talking to somebody, and it was like, when Falling Slowly won for the movie Once, would of that even gotten time to be played on air, considering it was two non-stars at the time?
Yeah. One of them got played off before they could say anything, and Jon Stewart had her come back out after the commercial break, if you remember correctly.
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, if you're going to have the category, have the singing.
Or don't have any. I mean, and I have no problem with that, to be honest. Like, I'd prefer that they all get to sing at least part of the song. Give them, like, a verse, you know, and just do them all back to back. But if you're going to have one, you have to have them all.
All right, and you're going to have The Weeknd up there. You got Sam Smith singing his awful Bond theme song. And you gotta have Lady Gaga. So,
well, she was there last year doing The Sound of Music.
Yeah, they like her.
So yeah, that's another thing that, you know, people are talking about. It's kind of goofy. And do you have any particular like ceremonies from the past like that you remember fondly?
I don't know if I remember fondly. I mean, when Falling Slowly won for best song over all those Enchanted songs. Disney's Enchanted.
Yeah.
That was a big win for me. I was really excited about that.
I meant more like the ceremonies as a whole.
I mean, I don't really remember them.
Oh, you don't feel it? Yeah.
as that well. Like, I don't like Jon Stewart. I couldn't tell you. I mean, best host is probably Billy Crystal, but.
I thought that Hugh Jackman did a really good job the year that he did it, and that that show was very good. And I think the other one that I thought was very good was Ellen DeGeneres from a couple years ago with the like the big selfie and the pizza delivery, and I kind of enjoyed her shtick that year. Those are two that if somebody asked me for how to make the ceremony better, kind of follow that sort of template. And one of those two, they're very different, but they were both very good.
Well, we'll see how they throw the darts this year. I know that they used to have for like 2 years where they had an actor go up there and say nice things about all the nominees, and that was just kind of
they used to do it that in like some capacity. Yeah, they did different variations of that a couple times. And sometimes it seemed nice when they like the actors had like a connection, but other times it was like oh, so like Whoopi Goldberg's gonna tell me like what a great job Anne Hathaway did, and I'm kind of like, oh, cool, I guess.
All right, well, that's the Oscars. The 88th Annual Academy Awards are airing this Sunday, and I hope you come to both of our websites, ImpassionedCinema.com and
JohnLikesMovies.com. So, before we head out, Max, do you want to talk a little bit about, I guess this is the closest thing we have right now to like a, hopefully a regular recurring segment, but we want to talk about sort of the last noteworthy movie we saw. So, I know you saw a new release recently that is interesting on a number of different levels, called The Mermaid. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I'd love to. Basically, The Mermaid is a film that's sweeping China right now. It's basically the biggest movie that's ever been released there, making over $400 million in the 2 weeks that's been released.
Wow.
Sony Pictures got the rights to it and released it nowhere in America. As a matter of fact, they released it in 25 theaters. And even though they did such a small number, the film still managed to bring in $1 million last weekend.
Yeah.
The film is from director Stephen Chow, I believe is his name.
Yeah, I think it's Stephen Chow.
And he was the director of Shaolin Soccer and Kung Fu Hustle. So if you've seen those movies, you might know what to expect. The Mermaid is really all over the place. And that's what makes it so good, actually. Okay. It's like it's a romance, a comedy, an action film. And it's also a statement on the ocean life in China and stuff like that. So it really is exciting to see a movie like that. And while it's not a home run, it's understandable why it's so popular and why audiences are getting behind it.
Is it something that you would recommend people seek out on the big screen if they're interested, or can they wait until, it's streaming or something?
Given how few places you can see it, I mean,
right.
It's terrible, but you might just have to wait till it comes out on DVD and Blu-ray. If you happen to be in one of the cities that have it, I actually saw the film in 2D, and it's actually available in 3D, and it seemed like I was missing something.
Huh, okay.
I don't normally say that about movies, but this time it looked like it would have been more fun to maybe see it in 3D. So if you get the opportunity, might as well go all the way and see it in 3D.
I hope it expands, because I'd love a chance to see it. And if I have a chance to see it in 3D, I'll do that and I'll report back. But the one movie I want to talk about really briefly is not a new release by any stretch of the imagination, but it is having its 25th anniversary this year, and that is Oliver Stone's JFK, which I watched for the first time this week. And I don't know, I guess I just sort of, I'm swept up in, election fever, and I've been thinking about movies that are related to the presidency and kind of pondering what, if anything, they have to say about like the election season that we're in right now. And after watching JFK for the first time, I'd say that movie has almost nothing to do with, you know, President Trump, or you know, all of those other crazy things happening right now. But it's nonetheless a really interesting and very, very good movie. And it's 3 hours long, so you need to find a chunk of time if you want to visit or revisit that movie. But you know, some of the reenactments that Stone has, I think, were pretty novel. And certainly very important going forward for certain types of movies like this, and the way he edits it and the way it's shot is really neat. And I mean, the cast is really strong. There's not really like a standout performer, I didn't feel like, in the movie, but there's a lot of really good actors doing really good work. Some of it, you know, kind of in small roles, but like Jack Lemmon is in there for about 10 minutes, and Donald Sutherland. Oh my God, Donald Sutherland has like one scene, but he's so good. And, you know, it's a fun movie that, obviously, you know, if you know anything about it, it's that, you know, Stone is a conspiracy theorist and has a lot of things to say about how, JFK was killed. And it's kind of interesting to just dive down that rabbit hole and hear what he has to say. And the movie is frightening, a little frightening in how much it might convince you, but yeah, I had fun watching it, and I'm excited to maybe write about it soon.
Is there anything that they're doing special for the 25th anniversary of JFK, or did you just
not that I've it? Heard? You know, it's just sort of happenstance that I decided to watch it. I've owned the DVD for some time, and it's just kind of like I never really got around to it, and I thought that now is as good a time as any, and I don't know. There might be something coming up. I think if I remember correctly, it was a later year release, so maybe there'll be something coming up in the fall if they want to do a re-release on DVD and Blu-ray, or maybe it'll come out on Criterion.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, I could see a lot of sites doing an appreciation.
I think that you'll see a lot of those, yeah, for sure. And I know the writer Matt Zoller Seitz, he did the really awesome Wes Anderson book a couple years ago, and I know he said that his next book is going to be about Oliver Stone. And so I don't know if that's coming out, but coming out this year, rather. But, you know, that'd be a nice tie-in if it does.
Great. And, yeah, I look forward to seeing JFK myself soon. I've never seen it, and I've heard that the cast is spectacular. So
I think you'll like it.
Great. I look forward to seeing it.
So, Max, where can we find you online?
You can find me at my new Twitter address, which is MH Colville. And you can also find me at my website, impassionedcinema.com. I also have a Letterboxd account if you want to see what latest movies I've been watching. And John?
I'm also on Letterboxd and updating as frequently as I can. I just logged a whole bunch of movies I watched on airplanes during my vacation, most of which were not very good. And sorry, I'm looking at you, burnt. And my website, johnlikesmovies.com, and on Twitter, I'm at John L. Gilpatrick. And this is the first episode of It's the Pictures podcast. Thank you for listening and for downloading, and we'll be back in 2 weeks to talk more movies.
See ya.
Bye.